Can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
Okay, so that's with bacon, cheese, lettuce, tomato, grilled onions, ketchup, and hold the pickles.
You know what you like. You wouldn't order your burger just any way. Why should your sports talk be any different? With Chapters on the free Odyssey app, you can choose the topics that matter to you most. Whether it's reactions, matchup previews, injury updates, or team news, quickly find what you really care about. Your football talk, your way. Download the free Odyssey app and start listening today.
It's Paul Hamilton.
That's what they called me in college, Mr. Bone.
He has the facts to back up his opinions.
People ask me, well, how are the Sabres going to, are they going to win tonight? I don't have a clue.
On WGR Sports Radio 550.
Happy New Year. Thanks for listening. Mike Shope and the Bulldog here. Paul Hamilton with us on the West Her Hotline. Been enjoying my time with Paul in Bulldog's absence here over the holidays. Talked to Paul about how he likes to cook. Cooked a meal for himself. Was that Christmas, Paul? Or one of these days we've been talking, you mentioned dabbling in that. I didn't realize you were as fond of cooking as you might be. Paul?
Hmm. Apparently Paul's not prepared to take
that
questions.
That was you, right? His that was Paul, I think. Pretty sure.
We've lost our connection with Paul.
I got my favorite Christmas present, I think I would say. No offense to everyone else and the other presents. A salt table.
No, what's that now?
A big block Himalayan salt table, which you can serve on or, you know, serve with or use for the actual cooking.
Like so, shave salt off it to put in your dishes?
You don't even have to do it. The only thing I've done with it so far is potatoes. Like, this will be pretty easy. Just bake potatoes, and then what you do is quarter them, little dab of butter on each one, and then you set them skin side down on the salt table and smash them. And my daughter was the first to try it. She said, too salty. There was no salt ever applied in the cooking of the potatoes, but it's what the block is made of. And so you can do all kinds of crazy things with, well, I don't know if crazy is the word. Interesting things with a salt table. Paul, hi.
Hey, guys. Don't you find it interesting? I was on earlier with Zach, and there were no problems at all with the equipment. And then, you know, I come on with you, and Zach sabotages the whole thing.
I think Bulldog's the difference.
I think it's because of me, Paul. You're taking it out on me that I haven't been around. You've been saying back to you guys and all these pregame interviews, and I haven't been here. There've been no guys.
Well,
at least I remember today that it won't be you guys on the pregame. So,
right, 8 o'clock, Steve Foley Law pregame, Sabres and Avalanche. Last time we talked was before the game in Dallas. What were your takeaways?
Well, again, they just gave up way too many shots. 70 shots now in the last two games. You know, in those three games, starting with Boston, they'd given up 21 shots per game and played very well defensively. And now it's taken, Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen to stand on his head just to keep them in the game. You know, so that, you know, that's been a problem so far. And yeah, it was 2-2 in the third period, but it was only 2-2 in the third period because a guy like Luukkonen was standing on his head. So, and the other thing was, too, you know how they beat St. Louis partly because of Luukkonen and partly because they won the special teams battle. They had two power play goals. They didn't even get a power play opportunity. They're 4 for their last 10 on the power play. There was one power play opportunity in the whole game, which tells me, as we see every year in the NHL, when the second half of the season starts, we go to playoff officiating.
So the power plays will be few and far between is the point here, right?
In Colorado's last game, there was one power play also.
Because I'm waiting to say something about like it being indicative of a lack of effort, right? If you can't draw a single power play in an entire 60-minute game.
It's not that everybody's of good cheer around the holidays. It couldn't be that. wouldn't be that.
Well, Dallas only got one power play.
Right. So Luukkonen kind of stole their last win and then could not manage to steal this Dallas game, basically, is what I get.
Yeah, he
right?
played well enough to maybe steal the game, but unfortunately for them, it was 2-2 midway through the third period. They had three shots until they pulled the goaltender and had two more, so they had five shots the whole third period. Really, the only time they looked like the team that played for those three games against Boston, Chicago, and the Islanders was after Zucker scored to make it 1-1 in the second period. It was like midway through the second period. They hadn't shown up yet. And then for the rest of the period, they were the better team. Dallas hardly had any time in the offensive zone. The Sabres kind of switched it around. But it got right back to what we were watching earlier in the game for the third period. As I said, they only managed three shots, 5-on-5, until the goaltender was pulled.
So what is left to accomplish here at this point, Paul? Like, are you paying attention to the standings?
Yes, because it's my job.
Right.
If I was a fan, no, I would not be. To me, they're out of it. They're not mathematically out of it, but you know, it's going to take a 7-10 game winning streak to just. I mean, they won three in a row, and they didn't even get out of the cellar of the Eastern Conference.
Right,
they were still there. So it's going to take a 7-10 game winning streak to get them rolling again. And there's nothing at all that I've seen from this group in over 2 years that tells me they can't even win over three games. You know, four times this year they've had three-game winning streaks, and they've been foiled trying to get that fourth win each and every time. So if you and I remember Alex Tuch saying last year that at the end of the year, going, if you can't even win more than three games, you're not a playoff team. He's right. I mean, here the Colorado Avalanche, all of a sudden they've taken off and they've won, what was it, 9 out of 11, I believe? You know, so, you know, they've gone on a fairly lengthy, and most good teams do go on lengthy winning streaks. And, you know, if you're hoping that, yeah, but you could upset the Avalanche. Well, Colorado's 21-5 against the Sabres in their last 26 games and 10-2 in their last 12. So, yeah, you could.
Right. Well, it would be a nice turnaround because really I don't want to say the trouble first started, but, you know, that home game against them around, you know, just after Thanksgiving, I think it was, if not before. I'm trying to remember when that game was. Anyway, that was real trouble. The 4-0 lead, 4-1 in the third period, that collapse against Colorado. Like, if they could get this one, I don't know, I could see some fans going, okay, you know, put that behind you and maybe get on a roll here. Right, I can even hear you. If they get one here, then maybe, you know, no, it's not a 7 or 8 game winning streak, but it could be 8 out of 10 or something like that. You know?
That, I think, I would say was the game where everybody sort of threw their hands up,
right,
about the season. Not that it was over yet, but the point you just made, I don't think anybody wanted to have the conversation or, you know, consider the thought about, well, if they, because that was come back from California, lose 1-0, Vancouver, and then you have the Avs game where, like, for half of it, you think, all right, we're still pretty good. This is interesting.
Yep.
And then one game can do that when it's already been 13 years, I think.
Yep.
You know, and if that sort of bled into the locker room, the players would have had their own thoughts about it. I think that was, for me, that was that game this year.
I think it absolutely bled in the locker room because that's when, you know, the mentally fragile team showed up for many of the games. Because they were ahead in a lot of those games in that 13-game winless streak. But they kept blowing leads. It was, I believe, Detroit where they
5-3.
Had 3 goals.
Third period, yeah.
Goals in the third period.
Yep.
And they blew that game. I mean, it's just they're just not mentally tough to be able to get over. You know, even if something like that happens, remember when Comrie gave up 10, and didn't the Sabres score 9 their next game? After they gave up 10, so at least the next game they recovered. The Sabres, it didn't recover.
No, they spiraled.
That game.
Right.
Paul Hamilton on the Westher hotline. Well, a couple of the younger players we've been talking about, Quinn getting on the score sheet, Kulik with a 2-goal game. How does sort of the overall look in terms of the forwards? Let's just leave it at that at this point. Cousins is interesting here too. Some back and forth on like what he looks like, what he's accomplishing on the ice. How do you feel about the forward group in general right now?
Yeah, Quinn and Cousins at times were looking good, but still, if you look at the overall numbers, they weren't great, you know, for the two of them. And then Quinn was the guy last game where, you know, he first of all, he brings the puck out from the side wall to the slot area in the defensive zone, which kind of leaves you scratching your head. And then he fans on his pass and then panicked. You could just see it. And just swung his stick and just hit the puck. And he handed it right to Robertson in the slot. Wrong guy to hand it to. You know, probably any guy would have scored from there, but not you don't hand it to him. And it was just utter panic. I mean, you still, even though you made a mistake bringing the puck out from the wall to the middle of the ice, even after you fan, just flip it. Flip it up and out. Don't go, oh, no, and almost wind up for a golf shot and hand it right to the other team. It was just like you scratch your head going, wow. And he, you know, for a couple of years there, I liked the way he played. I thought he was a very intelligent player, but I think right now he's just so on the edge because, you know, he hadn't been playing well, and I think it affected him mentally. And then, you get plays like that after he scored a couple of goals in a couple of games.
Yeah, Paul, I know you've talked to him, you've been around him. He is maybe, take away the maybe, like he's the biggest mystery on this team to me. Because everything about his game, to me, seemed to really line up as like a very promising, like the whole thing was just arcing up. I didn't think there was anything fluky about, I didn't think he necessarily would be a 30-goal scorer or build on that, but still, it's a really nice flag to plant. And his all-around game, I mean, he's almost a disaster on a pretty regular basis, I feel like. And I just don't know what the heck happened to the kid.
Yeah, he in this little stretch, he had a couple of good offensive games where he looked like himself a little bit and maybe minimized the other stuff. And then that happened in Dallas. And that wasn't just that. He just didn't look good at all, neither did Cousins in against Dallas. To a point where I was a little surprised at the morning skate today when I saw that line was still together. And maybe Lindy Ruff's thinking, well, they put some points together for a couple of games, we'll keep it for a minute. But he couldn't have been happy with that play that Quinn made. I wondered then, it's like, well, is his night over? It wasn't.
Yeah.
He got back on the ice. But, you know, it just makes you wonder. And quite honestly, Bulldog, I did think he's a 30-goal scorer.
Yeah.
But the types of goals he scored with the kind of shot that he has, he was on a 27-goal pace last year. Now, he didn't play. I don't even think he played 30 games. Well, he didn't play even 30 games last year. But when he did play, even though he was coming back from injury, he was on a 27-goal pace.
I'm going to clarify. I thought we were talking about Cousins when I said everything I just said. So I'm sorry. I'm rusty, Paul. They're on the same line. They're having a tough time.
Oh.
But I segued into Cousins off of Quinn, and it's my fault for not paying close enough attention.
I think Cousins' 30-goal year was an outlier.
Right.
I wouldn't surprise me if we never saw that again.
I mean, I don't know. In that contract, it feels like if you could find a way to move him, you're going to get your head beaten in the trade. I think. You know, because but how realistic would you be about him becoming that guy again somewhere else if they did trade him?
I don't know if he'd be the 30-goal guy, but figuring out how to be a two-way player that scores 25 and can be your number two centerman. Now, there's a lot of interest out there for him, but it's not. See, everybody, a lot of people, even though the insiders are framing this that Adams is shopping Cousins. That's not what's happening here. Other teams are calling on Cousins, which actually at $7.1 million a year surprises me a little. I guess they feel that if they can get their hands on him, they'll get him back to where he needs to be.
Right.
But for that reason that I think you're talking about, it could blow up in your face easily. Because if he straightens himself out mentally, you got a darn good hockey player. But does he do that? I don't know. And does a change of scenery when you get out of this losing atmosphere, this drudgery atmosphere that's
right.
been here for 3 years, or I'm sorry, 13 years? Well, a lot of other players have really done well when they've gotten out of this atmosphere here. So, you know, but Adams is not shopping him, but he certainly, and should be, he's listening. I mean, it's all right. What do you want to offer me? You never know when the offer is too good to pass up.
Yeah. Yeah, the explanation for me on Quinn is that the leg injuries took a lot out of him, and maybe he'll get back at some point, but he just has not looked like himself skating, mostly, I would say, at least early in the year. Maybe it's gotten better here a little bit as the season has gone on, and he's sort of maybe ramped up, but yeah, Cousins to me is the big mystery. Like, I just don't understand it.
He's so emotional in the game and wants to do well so badly that it just ties him up in knots. And then and you almost can see it on the ice. And then the frustration. You can see frustration written all over him when he plays. You can tell when he's right. And it just is all over him and his mannerisms and everything. And a lot of it is just he gets carried away, you know, with frustration that he can't do the right things anymore. It takes over his body.
Paul Hamilton on the Western Hotline for a few more minutes with us here. Sabres are in Colorado to play the Avalanche tonight. Steve Foley Law pregame rolls at 8, game time a little after 9. I think Mike already mentioned him at the top that you've been talking about Jiří Kulík, and that makes sense. He seems to be getting some credit from the coach, maybe most notably, about his all-around play sort of feeding into these opportunities he's starting to create.
Yeah, I think it's noticeable. I was watching in Dallas and getting back in the defensive corner and, you know, winning a couple of battles and helping out the defensemen and helping them get the puck out of the zone. It has been noticeable, his improvement on the defensive end and the winning of battles. I remember one goal that he didn't score, but was because of him, as he got out to the blue line quickly. The other team turned the puck right over to him. Might have been the Chicago game, and he ripped it towards the net and wound up getting a nice assist. They wound up getting a goal out of it. It was all because he hustled to get that turnover. And the play he made in St. Louis, I mean, wow.
Yeah.
I mean, he made Justin Falk look like a 19-year-old rookie. And then there was no way Fowler was getting him. As he just put the jets on, and then he makes this little move to his left, opens up the goaltender's pads, and slides it right between the legs. I mean, that just kind of gives you an idea maybe what's to come with this kid. That was just a gorgeous goal. But it was effort. He scored a goal beating two guys a couple of games ago, where he just won two battles as he was coming down ice and scored on that play too. That was the Islander game.
Want to throw a nickel on tonight's game going to overtime. The last time the Sabres and Avalanche played a game that went to overtime, Brad Boyes took a shootout attempt for the Sabres.
Holy moly.
Coletta took a penalty in this game. Sorry, Pat. I mean, he could have scored two. I don't know. I just see the penalties. Trying to come up with names that feel like a long time ago. That whole team. March of 2012, wow. I believe, is the last. I'm doing this by hand. I think that's the last time they went to overtime. The Sabres are a Bulldog, a fairly respectable minus 142 to win or lose by only one. Like the +1.5 for you if you want it. Minus 142. I don't know if that's good odds. Paul, are you watching more of the juniors?
Not yet. Since we're off time a little bit here, I've been actually trying to get my article up, which I have done. And one thing people will see in it quickly is, yes, Tage Thompson has 5 points in his last 4 games and points in his last 4 games. Can you believe in his last 12 games he has had over 2 shots once? I mean, he just is not shooting the puck, even though he's on a point streak. And it is worrisome from Ruff, too. You'll hear it in the pregame show that, you know, he needs to get more opportunities and more pucks at the net. You can't have Tage Thompson having 2 or less shots in 11 out of 12 games.
Sounds right. All right, Paul, thanks for your time today. We'll be listening tonight.
Okay.
Any questions for us? No.
I'm open to it. Sure. He left.
Paul's gone. It's too late.
Could have gotten some cooking questions in,
Paul,
either direction.
I want to hear more about this salt table because it sounds like you just made a new way to make mashed potatoes. is how you described what you were doing to those potatoes on the salt table. Paul, hang on. Paul's appearance on WGR is brought in a messier way to make mashed potatoes at that. Paul's appearance with us on WGR brought to you by Equitable Advisors. Planning for your future is about more than just money. Let Equitable be your guide. And by Relax Honda. Relax, we got this.
It seemed like the easiest recipe in the book.
Yeah, I get it. Yeah.
And it went well, but it seemed too salty. I'm definitely not giving up on my salt plates.
All right.
Like sliders are on there, fajitas, but you're cooking on the salt plate. You might end up baking food in the traditional oven, but then setting up the salt plate on the burners to sort of warm it up. You got to sort of do it by steps, put it on the grill in the summer.
So this is, it's a cooking utensil.
It's both, yes, like a cooking vehicle and also like a plate you could serve on just for a little added sophistication, perhaps. Looks cool.
Not familiar. I've not seen one of these in the wild at all.
Anywhere. Yeah.
Like in a restaurant or at anyone's house.
No, I don't think I've ever seen one in a restaurant. But they could be cooking with them.
Yeah, all right.
But, you know, just not. I've never been served
on
a salt plate.
Not one of those things
that
people bring out to a table with things on fire, in other words. As far as you
I think that's correct.
Okay.
Yeah. I think that's correct. But I just love like dabbling, you know, that's what it's not going to be every day, the salt plate, but just sort of to dabble with it.
Sure. Yeah. All right. I look forward to more
salt
stories about your adventures with the salt plate.
The Sugar Bowl is underway. So Georgia got the ball first and eventually punted. They must have had fourth and 21 or something, because there was a running into the kicker penalty against Notre Dame, which was like classic. Not that running into the kicker would be literally in a dictionary, but sort of the picture in the dictionary.
Absolutely smashed the crap out of that punter.
Blasted right through his extended leg.
Right.
5 yard penalty.
I can't believe that was only 5 yards.
I'm sort of asking Zach maybe, or you just rhetorically. I feel like the Georgia. Was it Texas they played SEC championship?
Yep.
Didn't the Georgia punter just get wrecked in that game too and leave?
Yep.
And then they didn't have to punt again? They called a fake punt.
They ended up pulling the fake punt like a drive later, and
yeah,
no one was prepared for it.
And that worked because the punter was injured. I wonder if it's the same kid. Like he's back from that, because the quarterback did not come back from injury.
Back is out, right.
Correct.
Yeah.
But Georgia,
yeah,
I've watched 5 college football games this year, and this is the second one I've seen the Georgia
punter get wrecked.
Get injured. The other one, the Texas one, I don't think was on a punt. I think it was on like a tackle or something. The guy was injured downfield. More respectable. Well, if you're a punter and you were getting hurt, wouldn't you want it to be like you had a touchdown saving tackle
then
or something?
Yeah, some guy trying to block your punt and missing and completely annihilating your leg, which is basically what happened there.
Not that that's your fault, but
right. Just
not as cool. No score, first quarter. Notre Dame has the ball now in the Sugar Bowl, rescheduled from last night. Sal joins us at 5. We'll talk some more NFL playoff picture, week 18 for most of the rest of the day. How about this Pro Bowl? 2 Bills. 9 Ravens. 2 Bills. 803-0550 for your calls. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog, WGR.
There's some teams that are harder to sneak the ball on if they've got some bigger guys and they have a good plan for that. Sometimes it is just man-on-man and low man wins, and again, just trying to find the right crease and trying to get 1 yard. And sometimes, you know, we've been pretty successful at it this year. Probably a couple times where I didn't do a good enough job, but it's definitely a powerful tool for us that maybe not a lot of teams can use it because of the size that we have up front. I'm at the quarterback and the guy usually behind me pushing, so...
Pro Bowler Josh Allen. The Bills rank second in the league this year at fourth down success percentage. 15 out of 18. 83.3% ranked second in the league. They've allowed 16 conversions on 31 attempts. They're winning a lot. So you have games here where teams would feel like they have to go for it on fourth down. 51.6, and that's ninth best defensively. So 83.3, they've only been stopped on fourth down this year 3 times, and I'm sure that the majority, maybe the vast majority of those 18 were short yardage, which is such, do we not say it all the time? Does anybody not know this yet? Think of the effects that advantage, like what it really affords you. how it shapes third down or can, even second down.
Yep.
When you know, you pretty much know that fourth and one or even fourth and two is in the bag, man, what an easy game. Bills and Patriots, Foxborough, 1 o'clock. They're going to play it. Drake May.
Yes, they are.
Drake May limited, second straight day. So, also from talking to Joe Ostrowski earlier, it sounds like the Patriots want May to start, but he's not fully healthy. So, you know, maybe he shouldn't. They get the number one pick if they lose.
Yeah.
Have you thought about that much?
Not really. I mean, I think... I would expect them to see if they could trade it if they get it. I mean, you know, it really depends on what, you know, what consensus becomes about. Or really, I guess it just becomes about one team. If some team out there really wants, you know, whoever, Sanders or Ward or, you know, one of the quarterbacks that probably isn't anywhere near as good as the guys the last couple of years, but still, they're QBs, so they'll go early. If somebody gets really hot and bothered about that, then they could probably do pretty great if they move down, which is what I would advise. They need so much stuff. So to me, like, if you can get, like, a couple of linemen and a couple of skill players out of that trade, like, that's all I need to make sure I get the one.
Well, I'm not Chris Trapasso, but here's my guess. The top 5 to 10 teams in the draft order will be playing chicken all through the process because the quarterback or quarterbacks that will top the rankings will not be consensus, like, great picks. You know, there's division on that. Cam Ward or Sanders, like, they don't look to everybody like sure thing first round picks. Then you have the teams like the Patriots and I think the Bears and I think Carolina. You know, some of those teams will not be in the quarterback market, or at least probably a couple others too. Then you have teams like the Giants and the Jets and Tennessee, maybe, where everybody would think that they'd want to be, you know, if there's any way. But let's just try it, you know, whether one of those guys or someone else. So the Patriots, I think that's all logical. They'll just have to be able to make it worth doing. You know, there are years in the draft where people don't want the first pick, but that includes the other teams. And would you just take any best offer for that pick come the night of the draft, or would you sort of feel like, you know, it's probably better if we just take our guy and sell it than take a cheap offer for moving down?
I definitely wouldn't want to... I mean, I'd have to have some flexibility about the marketability of the pick, right? But I don't think I'd want to go too far with that, because it would get pretty easy to talk yourself into the best left tackle in the draft or whatever. Like, I got May last year, let's nail that down, and we'll just sort of build from there, you know? So that could make a lot of sense too. I think you could really clean up if somebody really is hot for somebody. And that's why I think for them, being at the top is like in a year where there's 3, 4, 5 quarterbacks, you could probably do pretty well trading the second or third pick, even if you want, and let somebody else go first. And like, here comes somebody from, you know, the 12th or 13th spot that doesn't have their guy, but they had a better year than, you know, whatever. So they're there and they want to come up and get a guy. I think you only got one shot at that, and it's the top, you know, unless the, you know, somebody just falls in love so much with one of those QBs that they'll wait and take them too, and maybe pay a little less. But I just feel like the quarterback class not being highly thought of makes me feel like their chance to do well in a trade is to have the one, and everything else is a little sketchy after that. I think
the Raiders at 8 at the moment, going on and winning their last two games to move down to the draft order. It's very Raiders.
Oh, yeah.
Jets at 7 at this point. 9 teams at either 3 or 4 wins going into the final week. Chance is with us. Hello.
Hey, guys. I was just wondering if you think our defensive line is good enough to hold off the better offenses that we're going to face in the playoffs.
I think so. I mean, they're not the 85 Bears or the 01 Ravens or anything. Are they good enough? Yeah, I they're good enough. I feel like these years, a lot of these years, as much of a beating as McDermott's defenses take. I mean, what kind of output am I having on offense? This is more true of the Cincinnati game than it is the Chiefs game last year. The Chiefs did whatever they wanted against the Bills, and they were injured pretty severely at that helped that along. I feel like if my offense is hitting, yes, it's good enough. I think in tandem, it's not a shutdown like, oh my God, I got to go play the Bills in that defense. But they're respectable. They keep a lot of stuff in front of them. They're going to make you earn it. Sorry about that. I think as long as the offense is, you know, humming, I'm not that worried about.
We're making you earn defense. It right now. We're making you earn it.
I do feel pretty good, though.
I think it's a reasonable question, and I don't know what will happen. So you can feel good about it or not. That's been part of the story with the Bills in these playoff losses. Is they have not been, particularly against Kansas City. You can give them a pass for last year if you want, but they've been bad, ultimately. They've gotten really outplayed defensively in these games, and you've got the Chiefs again here, ultimately, probably. You've got the Ravens, very possibly. You know, maybe somebody, there'll be somebody else first, whoever that is. And this is an area where they probably will need to be better than what it's been in recent years. I do feel, as you know, like it's not something I'm often thinking about because it's always for me, I'm going to win through Allen or I'm going to lose.
Right.
And that's with a solid defensive line or a great one or a bad one or whatever. Like that's still, it's possible to win without strength there and it's, you know, possible to lose, you know, with it. So I think it's a choice you can make about their D, but it's been a part of the story in these losses to the Chiefs. I always have it like it's at least one page away right here in this notebook where I'm already working backwards here. I've filled it, but Mahomes in those three games in the playoffs against the Bills, there it is. 29 for 38, 325 and 3, 33 for 44, 378 and 3. Last year, 17 for 23, 215 and 2. 8 interceptions. Don't I wish. 8 touchdowns, no interceptions, about 300 yards a game or more, 26 incomplete passes in 3 years, in three meetings.
Right. But even with that, in that game last year, you're a missed field goal away from tying it late. So it's to me, is it hurting you? Could it be better? I mean, absolutely. Listen to those numbers. Of course, you'd want to be better there. But one of those games is 13 seconds, which they had won and blew it. Right, and that's the point about the offense. Like, if the offense is performing, I mean, not necessarily at that level, but I mean, that'd be nice. They've scored 40 here 3 times in the last 5 weeks. Like, they look more like that team than they have, I think, almost since the 21 season started, or 22 season, I guess I should say. So that to me is the great equalizer, you know. Like a great offense is going to eat. They're going to get theirs. The Bills are not shutting anybody down, but provided my other side of the ball, the offense, you know, gets their 30 points, I think I can hang with anybody.
Gabe Davis, the 4 touchdowns in that game, seems more interesting by the year, you know, to look back on. Didn't you feel that Davis was just like coming out party kind of stuff, that he's actually great, not just a good compliment in this offense, but who could put up that game and not just blast
have
off?
It be a launching pad for your entire career, right?
And just so didn't. I mean, the next year was a big disappointment. He was hurt, but still, and then he goes to Jacksonville, and that busted too. So I don't know. I wonder if that becomes like an amazing trivia question someday. The game is so famous,
right?
But it's not Diggs, it's Davis, who puts up like an all-time record performance. The Bills have that, and then they have Moulds from the 98 playoff, where it's two of the very best wide receiver performances in NFL playoff history.
Losing efforts. Right.
And they lost both. Keith is next. Hi, Keith.
Good afternoon, guys. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, Keith.
I think I can still say that, right? It's not
too easy. The 2nd of January, it's totally fine.
Fine. You cruise through the weekend with this, but don't hit me up on Monday with it.
Great. All right. Understood. Well, I just wanted to offer something I've been talking to friends about, and it's just this idea that we've been talking a lot about, is the defense good enough for the playoff run? And really, my conclusion is it's never been good during the playoff run, as you guys just discussed. And the whole approach has been, don't get beat deep, make them earn it. And this year there's been times where all that has led to is Josh Allen having the ball less. So my question is it time to really abandon that philosophy and say, hey, we're going to play tight. We got three good corners. We're going to play tight. They beat us. The worst thing that happens is Josh Allen gets the ball back, and we turn this into a Lions or Rams game. But it just seems the worst possible scenario in the playoffs is Josh Allen losing the time of possession battle.
Sitting on the sideline watching the game go by, exactly. Pondering his fate. Yeah.
What? We got Benford. We got these guys that are playing at ultra levels, but all I see on TV is, and when I'm at games, is us playing 10 yards off receivers because we don't want to get beat deep, and we have the worst third down defense in the league. So at the very least, let them beat you deep if they do. Maybe you get more sacks, maybe you get more interceptions, but at the very least, Josh Allen gets the ball back.
All right, well, it's logical. The word is aggressiveness, right? That's what you want to see. You want to see them take more chances. I guess I'd be surprised if they did it because I think they feel like they know what they're doing on defense. But
I feel like a wolf just put on sheep's clothing and walked through the door and said, I think the Bills should replace Sean McDermott. Like that's, I mean, what are you trying to do here? I mean, he didn't say that, I know. But if you want to change their philosophy on defense, you want to change the coach.
Well, okay.
That's what we're talking about.
But that's obviously not.
Right, exactly.
The caller wants him, McDermott, to change it up because in the playoffs they have gotten beat. And I don't know. I feel like it's maybe fair. If it doesn't happen, then you can have the conversation about whether it's the guy or something.
Yeah. But I might be a little itchy on the trigger finger here. What day is it? I just don't think there's any way in hell that happens. You want Sean McDermott to change who he is. They've won five division titles in a row. They win playoff games every year. It's just not happening. It'd be stunning to me if they came out and played the Chiefs in man defense in the AFC title game or something. Like, it just would blow my mind.
Wade would do it.
I'm not saying it's a horrible idea even. It's just not realistic at all, I don't think. And I think it does sort of... I mean, it's a smack at McDermott to say, like, they've never been any good. I mean, they've won games every year in the playoffs. So, I don't know. I'm a little defensive about it.
Well, the next caller is going to tell you who the quarterbacks were.
Right.
Of those games. Yeah, I don't know. Like, we're very much generalizing this point. But could the Bills maybe be more aggressive in these games? It's a different look. The Chiefs are so familiar with them as it is. There might be an element of surprise there, or the Ravens. Just two very different challenges, Kansas City and Baltimore, though, too. So it really has to just be sort of a more generalized thing. But I like the vibe, you know? Let this thing come down to Allen somehow. And, you know, maybe it will, but I don't know. They're probably not going to go all out, create zero blitz, no huddle, trying to get into 48-42 playoff games.
Yeah, I'm 100% against this idea.
Okay.
The more I'm sitting here with it, I'm back to where I was with the wolf and the sheep and the Fire McDermott thing. Because I wouldn't be for it. It's an interesting idea, but I hate when teams change entirely who they are. And McDermott's entire career is based on playing this way. And yes, it would be epic if he changed dramatically in some way for a specific matchup and might even be a good idea, but you're where you are doing what you do this way. I think to change it at this point would send a tough message to the team.
803-0550. Thanks for the call, Keith. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog, Sal Capaccio at 5. This is WGR. So, Eric Molds in the 98 Bills-Dolphins playoff game that Miami won in Miami, that's still the NFL record for receiving yards in a postseason game, 240. 9 for 240 and a touchdown. Davis, in the 13 seconds game for the Bills, went 8 for 201 and 4. The 4 might be a record. 201 is ninth all time. So the Bills have the number one yardage outing by a receiver in playoff history. And I think the 4 is a record for receiving touchdowns in one game.
I'm not positive, but it's certainly possible that that's right. And both losses, which is kind of amazing.
A couple others on this list. Jerry Rice in Super Bowl 23. He was the MVP. 11 for 215 in a touchdown. The only one in these nine, 200 yards and up, to not score a touchdown in the game is pretty famous, though. Anthony Carter, Minnesota, in an upset at the 49ers. That's the 87 season, strike season. 10 for 227 and zero. That's second most yards all time in a playoff game.
Of course, a big pile of Moldes' yards came on like the first series of the game. It was like a 70-yard play that he got caught and fumbled.
Fumbled
like
at the end of the play.
At the Miami 10 or something.
Yeah.
It was an
insane start to that game.
Yeah, yeah. It was like, oh, wow, this is great. Oh, wow. Right. You went from... he's going to score. Oh, he's not going to score. Okay. Oh, he fumbled. Just very, very quickly.
I kind of hated that game.
I kind of did too. What was the like about it? I mean, he played great and you lost. And that's it.
That is it. Pat is next. Hi, Pat.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good, Pat. Thanks for calling us. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, brother. Yeah, man, I listen to you guys every single day on the way home from work.
Thanks
from Buffalo,
that.
Man. Yeah, just listen to the caller before.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, man. I sit on the couch with my friends or family or whoever, and it's like, why are you guys playing 16 yards deep when it's a third and nine or whatever? And it's just like, man, you know, like he was saying, I don't know, play a little more press. You get burned. I don't know. It just seems like they often play... not prevent, but they step back to not get burned deep all the time, and I think that hurts throughout the game. But all in all, we still win. So I don't know.
Right, that's the thing I'm waiting to say is like how much should the coach even? I mean, sure, should only be trying to get better. You know, build the perfect machine, all that sort of stuff. Like keep working, but they have tremendous success, and I don't know, like. A little of this feels to me like we're watching these games. When did they clinch? Halloween? Like we're watching these games that, yes, the Bills are after the one seed. And so they're still going. But even Allen told you a couple weeks ago, it's not all the best stuff here. You know, we're just sort of, you know, I'm paraphrasing, but that was the spirit of the thing. If you don't think they're doing that on defense too, I think you're probably missing it. Like, they're just getting through these games to get to the games that matter. I'm not telling you it's going to be they're going to come out and play, like, aggressive press man defense. They are a passive. Overall, I would say their defense is passive. That's how they choose to play.
I think it's interesting to talk about. It's been true that consistently in the regular season, their defenses have been outstanding. This year, it's more predicated on takeaways.
Right.
Because their yards stuff is not outstanding.
No, they're not having a good year.
But will they think in the playoffs where it has gone wrong that change is needed? And that's really the question. I don't know that they would. And you're kind of saying you think they'd be crazy to. Or not that they'd be wrong to, but that you would not expect it.
Right.
And that might be true. But it's been a few of these losses, mm-hmm. and they are playing teams that they know so well and that know them so well with each probably, you know, assuming that they just don't run through the Chargers and the Broncos all the way to the Super Bowl or whatever, you know, they always call it a wrinkle. There'd be some difference in how a defense would play against a team that's played all the time. But would it be like a philosophical thing? It comes down to maybe whether they think they need to do something differently this time because they have failed other times. And I think they might. I think it's a good discussion. Thanks, Pat. Sal next. Let's throw it at Sal after the update here on WGR.